Hello and welcome to Holden Village. Today is Friday, August 9th, 2002. Today's session is entitled, Who is Your Abba? Paternity of the Gospel of John, the Trial of Jesus. It is presented by Paul Palumbo, and it is number PAP 2002-05. Let's listen in.
We're looking at today the arrest and trial of Jesus. What I want to do is to invite you from the beginning to keep in mind this question. Who is on trial? Okay. So, because that'll be helpful for us as we go through. The Lord be with you.
And also with you.
Let us pray. Gracious God, you call us to be your children. You love us. You beckon us. Open our eyes yet again to the truth, who is your Son, Jesus. And on this day, as people prepare to depart, we ask for safe travel, that you go with them to their homes, to their destinations. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay.
John 18.
We're going to take a little, a quick look at the arrest of Jesus, and then we're going to go to the another quick look at Jesus before the religious leaders, and then we're going to get into the Roman trial. Okay, starting in verse 2 of chapter 18. Now Judas, who betrayed him, also knew the place. They were in the garden, right? And because Jesus often met there with his disciples, so Judas brought a detachment of soldiers together with police from the chief priests and the Pharisees, and they came there with lanterns, torches, and weapons. Okay, this is really interesting because it's only in the Gospel of John, this detachment of soldiers. Okay, these are Roman soldiers. Right? It's very explicit. These, and there's a bunch of them. Right? This is not just a couple of guys. Okay, if this reference is correct, this is a deployment of soldiers has come to arrest Jesus. All right. So what we know from that then is that deployed these guys? Huh?
Officialdom,
and specifically
Pilate,
the governor, right? Okay, he's the one in charge. So right from the start, we know that Rome is involved in this thing. Because oftentimes we think that Pilate is surprised to have Jesus appear at his doorstep. And John is going to make the case, no. He's not surprised. All right. And so, they come together with the chief priest, with the police of the chief priests and of the Pharisees, and they came together. All right, so you have two different military groups coming together, or police groups, and they're coming together to arrest Jesus. Then Jesus, knowing all that was to happen to him, stepped forward and asked them, "Whom are you looking for?" Now, that's a great question. Whom are you looking for? Well, I mean, duh. No, come on. But the question harkens back to the beginning of the gospel. The question that Jesus asks the disciples that come to him. Whom are you looking for? Right? Whom do you seek? This is Jesus, I think Jesus is, or at least the gospel is saying, Jesus now he's invited the disciples to come and follow him. And he's going to continue in the same manner. He's going to continue to ask people to come and to see the truth. Because that's what Jesus does. Jesus is a truth revealer. And so it's almost in his nature. Someone comes to arrest them, and Jesus wants to, let's make disciples out of these guys. Let's give them a chance. So he uses the same line that he uses for the disciples early in the gospel. It's very interesting. It's almost like Jesus just can't. In some ways, I had a dog who loved to run and retrieve, and there was nothing this dog. I mean, it was in her blood to run and retrieve. And so, if you ran and retrieved, if you threw the ball for 100 times, she'd come back 101 and go, okay, let's go, I'm still ready. And I think in some ways Jesus is like that. You know, he's like, I'm going to reveal this truth. It's what I am. It's who I am. I can't do anything but. And so I'm going to invite these folks to see the truth. These folks who are the powers. All right. And of course, I don't think Jesus is as naive as as all that. But it's still a part of what he does. And we'll see we'll see it again. Who are you looking for? They answer, Jesus the Nazarene. Not Jesus of Nazareth. Okay? There is a big difference.
Jesus of Nazareth.
Yeah, it says Jesus of Nazareth, but it doesn't say that. It says it, but it doesn't say that. Okay. The Greek is not that. The Nazarene. Which is a big difference because the best example of this is Samuel, right? He's dedicated to God. When his mom can't have a child, right? And he's praying, she's praying, and Eli thinks she's drunk, and Eli says, when he gets the story straight, he says, go and let it be as you prayed. And she has this child, and she promises to dedicate this child to God. All right? And so she has the child, she breastfeeds the child, she weans the child, brings him to Eli, dedicated, so that the child is set apart, dedicated to God. Okay? And that's what this is saying, that Jesus is one who is set apart, separate. And remember, he is separate from the world. Not in the sense that he comes from heaven someplace far off and then enters into this world, but rather that his understanding of the world and the powers and the way the world works is not like what the powers who are in charge, how they operate. Okay, so it's, again, remember yesterday, for those of you who weren't here yesterday, we talked about different interpretations of the word cosmos, the world. And we talked about it can mean the universe, it can mean our planet, it can mean the world in other ways. It can mean also the social structures that at work and the powers that undermine them, or that undergird them, rather. Okay? And so when we talk about the world in the Gospel of John, that's the one where we're talking about. All right? The social structures. And those structures that keep us, as we saw yesterday, enslaved. So, Jesus is named as separate in right here as he's being arrested. We're looking for Jesus, the one who's separate. They don't know what they're saying, but the Gospel of John has given us some information here. Jesus replied, I am. All right. Ego eimi, that's the Greek translation of the great I am from Hebrew scriptures, right? That name of God. And when he says that, they stepped back and fell to the ground. It's almost, you can see it like dominoes, bing, 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 bing. The This is an incredible statement of the effect of the word, the name of God. Now, I was in the... were some of you here last night for the conversation about the Middle East, Israel and Palestine? Yes. How many of you felt completely powerless at the end of that? I mean, I did. I felt like, oh, what's to be done? You know, and it's a very frightening thing, and there's a sense in which it's out of control. This morning I read this and I thought, maybe not, you know, maybe not. The powers seem very, very powerful, very, very much in control. And yet all Jesus does is utter a name and these guys all fall to the floor. The name of God. So there's a real sense that the name of God, there's something powerful there. Right. We're going to see how this power is expressed in the cross, but there is a sense in which the powers can't stand in the face of that name, in the face of God. That to me was very helpful. So, maybe there is some hope here. So. Again, he asks, and now this is where I get the thing that he's continuing to ask. So he tells them who he is. All right? Now you've got more information. Whom do you seek? But they're not. They say, Jesus the Nazarene. Jesus answered, I told you that I am he. So if you're looking for me, let these men go. And that's to fulfill the words that it had spoken. I did not lose a single one from those whom you gave me. Simon Peter, we're going to quickly say, Simon Peter comes and he chops off the ear of the servant of the high priest. Jesus says, no. It's not the way we're going to do this.
You know, that's very interesting to me. I just read a novel called Elijah from the library here. Talking about Elijah and the miracle of bringing fire and defeating the Baal. Mm-hmm. And after God sends fire, Elijah orders the priests slain. And the rest of the novel, I thought that would be the climax, but it's only two-thirds of the way through. The rest of the novel, Elijah is listening for God to speak more because he's not satisfied with what happened. And God finally tells him, my ways are not the ways of men. My ways are gentle. Mm-hmm. And Elijah can't figure that out. And this reminded me of that. Elijah's first instinct was to draw the sword.
A very interesting. Do you want to do a little aside about Elijah, the prophets of Baal? I think it'll be worth your money. Therefore, I'm going to take a collection afterwards. You know the story that she's talking about, right? The prophets of Baal. Now, the reason that the prophets of Baal are so offensive is because they made their children walk through the fire in the holy places. And you know what that means? It means human sacrifice. Okay. Elijah instinctively knows human sacrifice is bad. Is wrong. Okay? So he gathers up these prophets. And there's the showdown, right? When they each make their altar and they put the bull on top and they each pray to their God. Well, Elijah, of course, wins this showdown. And which proves that the God who doesn't accept human sacrifice is the true God. Then Elijah, because even though he knows human sacrifice is wrong, is still hooked into the sacrificial system. He then goes and he slaughters the prophets. Human sacrifice. Okay? So he wins this showdown to show that human sacrifice is offensive, But in the only way that he knows this way of violence, which is so imbued in all of us, he destroys those people who advocated for human sacrifice, thus showing that he became what he abhorred. All right? And the reason that which is really interesting, because that this text is so wide open that way. In some ways, it's completely obvious. You know, what a weird thing to kill the prophets because they killed or made human sacrifice. And I think as the further along the prophets come, I mean, Elijah is an early prophet, but the later prophets, they're going to see real clearly that the whole business of the idea that, remember yesterday we talked about interpreting history, that we interpret history, we have to wait until we hear from the voice of whom? The victim. The victim of human sacrifice. And in the story of Elijah, those victims were those prophets who were slaughtered. Right? And so the whole story, the Hebrew Bible is very interesting in that it starts out here in one point in terms of sacrifice and violence. And boy, as it moves through, you see a real change in the prophets and their understanding of things. And until, in fact, the prophets are at the center and are the victims. And then, Jesus. Okay? And it is being at the center as the victim that gives these prophets the clarity to see what's going on all around them. Okay? All right, end of tangent. Except that we're going to see it again in the Gospel of John. So I thought it'd be worthwhile talking about it. Okay, now. So Peter, we got Peter, and he's trying to draw the sword. And Jesus says, put the sword back in its sheath. Am I not to drink the cup that the Father has given me? Am I not to live out faithfully what God has intended for me? Yes, I am. So the sword has nothing to do with that. Now, I'm going to skip quickly to verse 19. Because Jesus has been arrested, and now he's the high priest questions Jesus about his disciples and about his teaching. And Jesus said, I have spoke openly to the world. I have always taught in synagogues and in the temple, where all the Jews, Judean, where all Jews come together. I have said nothing in secret. Why do you ask me? Ask those who heard what I said to them. They know what I said. All right. Now, this is as much of a hearing as Jesus gets in the Gospel of John, right, from the religious leaders. There's no trial before Caiaphas in the Gospel of John. The reason for that is because the trial has already taken place. Remember yesterday we talked in chapter 8 about this being a mini trial? Remember the disciple, Jesus says, I am the light of the world, and the Judeans say, hey, you're testifying to yourself. You can't do that. And Jesus says, well, I have two people that testified to me. Me and my Father. You, just like in your law, you need two people, two witnesses. Well, here we are. And then they run through the whole thing, and it is a trial. I mean, there's questioning and counter questioning, and then at the end of the whole thing, which yesterday unfortunately we didn't get to the end, they finally ask him, "Are you greater than our father Abraham?" And he says, "Before Abraham was, I am." And that's when they know, that's when they decide that they're going to kill him. And that's when the sentence is already laid out, that he must die. Okay, so that's back in chapter 8. So the trial, in some sense, happens before he's ever arrested. Right? And it kind of reminded me of the fact that Jesus, it, only in John's gospel, remember we talked about the exorcism at the temple, right? Exorcising the temple happens at the beginning. In the synoptic gospels, it happens at the end. Jesus exorcises the temple, and then for the whole rest of the story, he is confronting the power of the temple and trying to say, no, the temple and its laws of purity and all of that and exclusiveness, all of those things, he's condemning the whole way through the gospel. So John's gospel in some ways gets kind of inverted, so that stuff happens at the beginning and ripples through the whole gospel. And so this is another example. Jesus is already tried in chapter 8. And now, when he's arrested, there's no trial. And old Nicodemus, remember Nicodemus from chapter 3? In chapter 9, he says, wait a minute, we can't arrest him without a hearing or condemn him without a hearing. But then, that's as much of a hearing as he gets, is chapter 8. Because here, there's nothing from the religious leaders. All right? Okay, now, I'm going to skip to, now with Simon Peter, is Peter's denial. We're going to skip that, although it's wonderful. We're going to skip it. We're going to go to 28. Verse 28, then they took Jesus from Caiaphas to Pilate's headquarters. It was early in the morning. They themselves did not enter the headquarters so as to avoid ritual defilement and to be able to eat the Passover. Now, that's beautiful, isn't it? What incredible irony. You know, it's the very... I think it's the very most obvious example of what Jesus has been saying the whole time. All right, man, you can be ritually pure and still do this stuff? Come on. This is a great irony here. Don't you think? So they continue to be ritually clean. So Pilate went out to them and said, what accusation do you bring against this man? Now, the word accusation, what does that hearken? What does that hearken to your mind? Who's the accuser? The Jews are the ones accusing him, right? The Jews are accusing him, all right? The Judeans are the religious leaders. Let's make sure that we're clear about that. Not just Jews, because it's these religious leaders, okay? Again, in the conversation last night, you know, people kept saying the people of Israel want this or want that. Well, you know, the people of Israel want... There's a whole bunch of different people who want lots of different things, but clearly the leaders want something, all right? So, and I think it's the same in the Gospel of John. So the Judeans, the leaders of the Jews, are the accusers. But before that, let's see. Where did we hear that? Did we hear that yesterday about isn't Satan the accuser? Right. Okay. So Satan is the accuser, and Satan is being... I think Satan is being hearkened here. In this, Pilate doesn't know it, but that word brings to mind the idea of Satan, and that Satan is the one who's doing it, is the accuser, and through these religious leaders. Okay. What accusation do you bring against this man? Now, also, let's look at this now. Again, I think Pilate is. You can read John's gospel and think Pilate is a good guy. You know? He'll take Jesus aside and he'll say, you know, talk to me. Tell me something. I'm trying to get you out. I'm trying to get you off here.
I don't think so. I don't think so at all. First of all, Pilate, as we've seen, has already sent his soldiers to help with the arrest. Okay. But I think what he's doing here is what we've got is a little bit of, you know, you all have heard Juan talk. Some of you have heard Juan talk about the people who snitch in the jails, you know, who work for as informants, right? And I think that the position that the Judeans in is a little bit like those guys. They think they have a little bit of power to manipulate things, but when they get before the narcs, the narcotic agents and stuff, they realize that they're still pretty low. And in this case, the Judeans are still the people who are, they're leaders of an already occupied people. So Pilate doesn't have a lot of confidence in them. He doesn't have a lot of, they're not on the same par. Okay. And I think that Pilate makes that clear. They answer, "If this man were not a criminal, we would not have handed him over to you." And Pilate said to them, "Take him yourself and judge him according to your law." And I think, again, he's kind of scoffing at him. And you can just hear it in their minds. They're probably going, yeah, we've tried that, and it's with embarrassing results. You know, throughout the gospel, they've tried to catch Jesus, and they end up being caught themselves. The Jews replied, "We're not permitted to put anyone to death." Okay? Now, that's a really interesting and telling phrase, because he's saying, the word that's used is used in this gospel and used in the gospels in general is, it is unlawful, that is, by Torah, okay, to put a man to death. Okay? The Torah won't permit us to kill this guy. But the word that's used here is not the word for, the Torah doesn't allow us to give this guy the death penalty. Which is what you would expect, right? We want to put this guy to death. We want to do it legally by the law of the Torah, and we can't do that. It's not what it says, though. It says, we are not permitted to murder him. Which is exactly, it's the same word that is used in reference to Satan, the father, the first murderer, a murderer from the beginning. And every time Jesus says, if you knew the Father, you would not be trying to murder me. So what are the Judeans doing here?
Getting somebody else to do their dirty work?
They're getting somebody else to do their dirty work. They're getting somebody else
to violate
one of the basic Ten Commandments, right? You shall not murder. That's pretty amazing. This was to fulfill what Jesus had said when he indicated the kind of death he was to die. Now, what do you think about that? To fulfill what he indicated the kind of death he was to die. What does that refer to?
Murder.
Huh?
Murder.
It could. That's how what I thought when I realized that this word was murder. I thought, well, maybe it's to indicate that he would be murdered. It could also indicate maybe that since they weren't going to do it and Rome was going to do it, how does Rome deal with enemies of the state?
Crucifixion.
By crucifixion.
As Jesus said, "I will be lifted up."
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
And let's be real clear about that. That's what crucifixion is. Crucifixion is used for, as an example. People are used in it as an example when you come against the Roman Empire. Okay. So when foreign kings were defeated in battle, the king was brought back to Rome, paraded through the city, and then hung on a cross. This is what happens when you go against the power of Rome. Okay. So and just about exclusively, that's what the cross is used for. So Jesus will be crucified as an enemy of the state. So then Pilate went and entered the headquarters again, summoned Jesus, and now we're going to have this conversation between Pilate and Jesus. Are you the king of the Jews? This is a great, if you want to win a trivia question. Are you the king of the Jews? Is one of the few phrases that is word for word identical in all four Gospels. Are you the king of the Jews? This is a question that the tradition obviously remembered verbatim. And it's of course a question that the Roman Empire wants to know. Are you making a claim? And Jesus answered, "Do you ask this on your own, or did others tell you about me?" Now, first of all, Pilate's probably not expecting Jesus to talk back to him, right? He's a prisoner, and but he does ask the question, so Jesus answers. But what he answers is, you know, I see through this. You know, you're in. The conspiracy is exposed here. Jesus is exposing that. As if you'd know that on your own. Somebody else is telling you this stuff. And Pilate is a little taken aback by it. And he says, "I'm not a Jew, am I? Your own nation and the chief priests have handed you over to me. What have you done?" And in some sense, we'll just go on. "My kingdom is not from this world. If my kingdom were from this world, my followers would be fighting to keep me from being handed over to the Jews. But as it is, my kingdom is not from here." So what do y'all make of that? Ooh, it's Friday. Is everybody tired?
Well, if he just said nothing, to the answer to the question, what hast thou done, then maybe he'd get off the hook and God's plan for the salvation of the world would be foiled.
If he'd have said nothing.
Yeah, he said, "I didn't do anything wrong. You know, I'm innocent." Then maybe Pilate would have let him go. And then God's plan would, for salvation of the world, would be foiled.
Okay, so maybe it would have been it might have been advantageous for him to not to claim innocence, but that might not have been
the plan
according to some plan that God had for salvation. Okay, that's one way of looking at this.
I think we read Pilate completely improperly. Mm-hmm. Pilate is no naive nice guy.
Right.
Pilate engineered this. Mm-hmm. Pilate played the Jews. He played the Jewish leadership. He had spies all over the place. He probably had spies in the, you know, right in the council, you know, the chief among the Sanhedrin. Mm-hmm. Pilate was going to get rid of anybody who was threatening the peace of that region. He had greater aspirations for himself than this stupid outpost where, you know, people got eaten alive out there. He was going to keep it down. So when you hear Pilate's words, I think of the devil and the liar. He's playing him. He already has him crucified. He already knows what's going to happen before the chief priests bring him. It's very clear the Romans engineered this stuff. yes, we can go blame the Jewish leadership and all that, but really, the Jewish leadership were no more, and Jesus basically said it, they were basically tools of the Romans. He made it very clear that, he told them all the time, what law are you following? Are you really following the law? What's all this thing? Whose coins are you, what's the base of the coin? He realizes that they're playing both sides of the fence.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think, you know, no matter what Jesus said, Pilate's going to crucify him. Mm-hmm. So Jesus is not going to play into Pilate's game. He's going to be true to himself and true to the word, and that's it. It doesn't matter what he says. Pilate said, he's playing the good cop, bad cop, but he's the bad cop, you know?
Okay. Yeah, so
he just wants him to put his confession down so Pilate can wash his hands and say, see, I'm a good guy,
mm-hmm.
which he's none of the above, you know?
Okay, yeah. So when Jesus says, my kingdom is not from this world, he's fundamentally saying, the rules that you live by are not the rules I will live by, right?
But I think this is for us too.
What's
written here is certainly for us, as John says at the end. You know, mm-hmm. these are written.
Right.
But that Jesus says his kingdom is not of this world. That we're apart.
Ah. Okay. Yeah. And so, what might he mean? What is his? What world is his kingdom of?
As he says, the kingdom of truth.
Uh-huh, okay. So truth?
And not as the world sees things.
Okay.
You're in the world, but not of the world.
All right, okay.
Not within this social order, but not a part of it. Not, you don't say yes to it.
All right, yeah, you don't say yes to it. In fact, you say no to it.
Right.
Right? So what would characterize Jesus' reign? If not Pilate's manipulation, violence, armies, seductions, intrigue, all of that, what would characterize Jesus' kingdom?
Love and justice.
Love, justice.
Truth.
Truth. Just shout them out when you get them.
Mercy.
Mercy.
Peace.
Equality.
Forgiveness.
Forgiveness.
Eternity.
I'm sorry?
Eternity.
Eternity.
I think those are ways we might interpret it, but I honestly doubt that Pilate would understand that. I think what Pilate would hear is, oh, you're saying that you're some sort of a spiritual leader and you don't have any aspirations to earthly rule. And you really don't mean to be a threat to me at all.
Okay, hold that thought. When we get to what... Well, no, I'll just say it now, but we'll go back to the Jesus' reign. I'm not sure. I think that Pilate is... I think at this point, Pilate is a little bit like me when I'm listening to somebody speak Spanish really fast. And I hear a word that I know, and then I hear that word again. And there's some words in between I don't know, but I've heard these two, so I know what this person's talking about, but I don't really know what this person is talking about. I mean, I know what the subject, but I don't know what's happening in the story. And I think Pilate is like this. I think Pilate has heard the word king, but I don't think he understands anything else of what Jesus is saying. I think he's oblivious. But he's tuned in enough to know, so you are a king, right? Because you've used the word king. But other than that, I think he doesn't get what Jesus is talking about. Because I don't think he gets what Jesus' kingdom is really about.
Yeah, as soon as Jesus says, if I were a king like that, I'd have a military unit.
Right, I'd be fighting.
And that's the whole structure that Pilate's world is based on the force of the armies to maintain that whole economic structure too.
Right. Exactly. Struggle or fight. The fight. Fighting. Right? Yeah, exactly. And that's the only example he uses. If my kingdom were of this world, we'd be in a battle right now. Yes?
If he had all these spies and things, wouldn't he have been hearing Jesus talking about the kingdom of heaven like this? So it seems like he would know what he was talking about. He's that smart.
I
think it's real.
In the Gospel of John, people who are in positions of power, and certainly Pilate is, he's the highest that we meet face to face. No, they don't understand Jesus. They hear him, but they don't understand what he's talking about. They don't understand it precisely because their mythology, he's talking different mythologies. I mean, he's talking over here, and they're over here, and this does not fit into this. And so it makes no sense to them. It's like a foreign language. They simply aren't getting it. Although the Samaritan woman, who is on the fringe, she gets it. I mean, she has to work on it, and she has to really work with Jesus to get it, but she gets it. Yes?
Well, what I think is really scary of the Roman authorities is here's this guy who is working with the masses, the dispossessed masses, and trying to give them some power, and that might overthrow us.
Right. Yeah. So there is a sense in which this movement is a threat to Rome. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
I think if you look at the interchange between Nicodemus and Jesus, you look at the other Jewish leaders and more the Jews as they're described, and the Pharisees and Jesus, there's always an interplay, interchange, continuing, and they try to approach an understanding.
Mm-hmm.
They don't get it,
right.
But they try to. Pilate in no way is trying to approach an understanding. He says, "What is truth?
Mm-hmm.
I find no guilt in it." And then he goes and plays the crowd, and then he scourges them. I don't think there's any genuineness.
Mm-mm.
At least the Jewish leaders have some genuineness. Once they get to a certain point, they get really angry and they want to kill him because he's a heretic, and that's it. He said something that got him really mad. Pilate seems not genuine in any of his interchanges because he goes from one side to the other, mm-hmm. and he has no problem playing everybody, way to, and so I see a completely different
mm-hmm.
picture.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's accurate.
But Pilate just he likes the ideas, maybe a little bit. He likes the good ideas. He's stimulated by Jesus, but when it comes to the realities of the world,
mm-hmm.
he'll go with the pressures, the political pressures. That's what makes a difference, right?
He'll go with what he knows. Absolutely.
I mean, if he's feeling political pressure, he's going to do what he needs to do.
Yeah.
Stay in power, right?
Right.
So the ideas aren't nearly as important as the political reality.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. I think that's absolutely right. And which is, I think, characteristic of the world, right? One of the things that the world is darn stubborn. Not going to change easily. Especially, the more investment you have in the world, the less likely you are interested in changing. You can talk and you can think about ideas. I mean, it's not unlike, you all can take this well, but it's not unlike you come to Holden Village and you hear all kinds of really cool stuff, and you hear about living simply and simplifying your life and the different things that you're good, that sound really good and they're fun to talk about.
Ah,
But, you know, but I love going to McDonald's. And I love, or, you know, I love my 5,000 square foot house, you know, are you telling me I have to think about changing that, or? I think that, you know, because most of us anyway, are not on the margin. I mean, we're right smack in the middle of that, and we do have investment in the way things are. And so we are not way different. And it might be on another scale, but we certainly have that same struggle, don't we? And when it comes to the political reality of our life, are we going to change? That's the question. Yeah.
I think you're reading way too much into this.
Okay.
I think if you go back when they said, but we have no right to execute, the simplest interpretation is because they were under Roman law, they no longer have the right to execute a judgment of death. I think that's the simplest. Pilate twice says here, I find no charge against you. Mm-hmm. I don't think he thinks Jesus is an earthly king. I don't think he's concerned about Jesus at all. I think he thinks this is some sort of an internal religious thing, and he's playing with them like they're mice.
Yeah.
Okay. I would say that there's, especially in John's gospel, I would say that you have to then account for the Roman guard, the Roman soldiers that arrest Jesus. You have to account for the fact that Jesus, the Jews, what they're saying here really is a verb that they used about the Torah, okay? So not about Roman law. I mean, aside from the fact of Roman law, our law won't even let them.
I think that's contradicted by their statement in verse 7 and 19. It says, we have a law, and according to the law, he must die. And as far as sending a detachment, he deferred to them even more, in my mind, by coming out into the courtyard. He could very well have said, look, if you guys can't deal with this today, come back on Monday. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to come out and talk to you in the streets because you won't come into the covenant.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that maybe he's more... Are you saying that he's more open to hearing what Jesus has to say and less decided beforehand than what I'm saying?
Yeah. I think he thinks the whole thing is an irrelevant religious debate within a suppressed community and one that he would just as soon not have to deal with.
Okay. But he puts him on a cross, which is a pretty...
He appeased... The religious
he does that for the sake of the Jews.
Just as he did by sending a detachment and by coming out into the courtyard. He took the easiest way out of it because he really didn't give a damn about the whole thing. That's my feeling.
Okay. All right. Okay. Yes.
Let's have some fun with this.
All right.
maybe the whole story written up this way explains why Jesus was killed on the cross and not stoned to death. See, had he been found guilty according to Jewish regulations, they would have stoned him to death, and they did stone people to death. They stoned Stephen to death later on, even though Rome controlled everything.
Uh-huh.
So they were not above killing people for whom they whom they found guilty.
Right.
So, but Jesus was crucified, not
stoned.
Stoned. Just think, if the Jews had their way, they would have stoned him, and we would have stones hanging on our necks.
Yes.
Stones on our altars and on our churches, and not crosses. I mean, this is one angle. We maybe ought to think about that.
Yeah.
We have to remember that these evangelists are literary persons in their own right, and they are inspired people. I don't mean they're verbally inspired, but I mean they have their heads screwed on right, and they know how to write a story.
Right.
And we might think about that.
Oh, yeah.
I think that the crowd was so much.
No, that's good.
The stoning would have been such a public thing that, and amongst their own, and maybe Jesus had that big a following that they would not have allowed that. I mean, he had done some wonderful signs. And maybe Joe Public wouldn't have stood for it if they had said, come and throw stones at him. But this was different. This was out of their hands.
So it's still an open question as to...
it was already prophesied in the Old Testament that he'd be hung on a tree.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that was the will of God. The story go this way.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So this certainly is. There's this business about fulfilling the way in which he was to die. Uh-huh. Yes.
At the same time, Pilate is the, wasn't he the procurator of this minor territory? It was his duty to prevent any kind of rebellion. Mm-hmm. And so, whoever said people might have arisen up, if Pilate was maybe trying to ascertain how much following Jesus had, whether there was danger of the people rising up.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's clearly part of his job. That's in the job description. Keep things calm. Because we're not interested in putting a lot of energy in this outpost. And that's what Rome was good at. All right, well, okay. So, well, let's talk a little bit about my followers would be fighting to keep me from being handed over to the Jews, but as it is, my kingdom is not from here. All right, we've talked a little bit about the nature of the kingdom, and then it seems to me that that's got some pretty strong implications in terms of Jesus. When Jesus is encountering all of these people, the powers of the world, does Jesus fight them? What is Jesus' mode of engaging with the powers?
Questions. Gentle. It usually comes back to the question.
There's questions. There's gentle. There's some gentleness that goes on.
Stay calm.
Yeah. Yeah. He kind of...
With a lot of it.
Yeah. He kind of opens things up, doesn't he? He kind of reveals things to people.
For this reason I was born, he indicates.
Yes, exactly. To reveal truth. So he's going around and he says, well, that's interesting you're doing that. Look at this. And it's an amazing thing that Jesus is constantly revealing people to themselves, revealing us to ourselves. And it isn't in the manner of, about the closest he gets to fighting is in the temple, right? Where he leads people out, you know, he gets a whip and he leads them out, right? But other than that, that's not the mode in which he operates. He didn't come to fight the world. He came to save it. He came to reveal the truth to it, to bring light to the darkness. The only way you really defeat darkness is by putting a light in there. And I think that's the nature of that's part of the nature of Jesus' kingdom as well. Pilate asks, "So you are a king?" And Jesus answered, "You say that I am a king. For this I was born, and for this I came into the world to testify to the truth." That says you were saying there. Everyone who belongs to the truth listens to my voice. Pilate asked him, "What is truth?" This is the great question that lingers, doesn't it? There's no answer. Although one wonders if John doesn't want us to think truth is standing there right next to him and he doesn't recognize it. Okay. So after he had said this, he went out to the Jews again and told them, "I find no case against him, but you have a custom," and this is what I want to get to, "that I release someone from you at the Passover. Do you want me to release for you the king of the Jews?" They shouted in reply, "Not this man,
but Barabbas. Now Barabbas was a bandit,
a murderer,
an insurrectionist. There's a lot of different ways to go with that. All right?
A criminal.
Yeah. Okay. Now, here's the deal. Now you have a choice. The crowd has a choice, right? And the choice is between two prisoners, Barabbas, and in some texts, even has a name, right? The name is Jesus Barabbas. And in some texts, even has a name, right? The name is Jesus Barabbas. Okay. And between Jesus Barabbas. Son of, well, this is Abba, is the, you know, that's the familiar term for father, right? Abba. So, the choice that's set before us in the text is Jesus Barabbas or Jesus Barabbas. Who's on trial here? Now, if this guy as we've seen, he is saying, violence is not part of my kingdom. All right. This guy, sure, absolutely. Right. Okay. So, who are we going to choose? Who do we like? That seems to me to be right at the heart of the question.
Who do you know?
Who do we know? Yeah. Who are we familiar with? I mean, I think we're familiar with Barabbas, this guy. That's what we think works in the world, right? I mean, otherwise, why would we bomb Afghanistan? If we thought that if we thought that violence wasn't going to do any good, or that our kingdom wasn't of violence, then we, of course, we wouldn't do that stuff. But we're following. We make a choice. What?
I think he's asking the same question in a way that begs the initial question: who are we a slave to? And you say we're not a slave to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have any king. So he throws out king of the Jews. Hey, we have no king.
Mm-hmm.
We have no king. But we do have this wonderful military war hero. Yeah, let's bring him out. Our hero.
Mm-hmm.
Our fighter pilot or whatever he was, you know.
Hmm.
We want him because we are free. We are free people. And to show we're free, we fight. But we don't have anybody over us. We don't like anybody over us. And I think the United States people are very similar. We don't like somebody that says, you have a leader that, you know, you have to follow. No, mm-hmm. We're independent, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We don't like to be, you know, we're not slaves to anybody. And we will show it because we're willing to put our fists up and fight.
Yeah. Which paradoxically makes us slaves to the violence that we.
Yeah.
Well, what? Maybe 2 minutes? Can you guys wait 2 minutes? This it seems to me is at the heart of the gospel of who is our Father, who's our Abba, right? It is this incredibly stark offering All right? You get to choose. You, church, you disciples of Jesus, every day we have this choice before us. Are we going to follow Jesus, the Son of the Father, through it, in a kingdom and in a reign that is that rejects so much of what we have embraced? All right? Or are we going to continue to follow the Son of the other Father, who I think if we had more time I could get you to see that this is this guy. See? Who is what? The father of was a murderer from the beginning and the father of lies. Okay? And so John's gospel finally comes to this really clear place where you say, who is your Abba? Go and live as children of God. Peace be with you.